So I'd like to welcome everybody here. This is the ninth symposium, the Industrial Moores Cancer Center Symposium. And we're very pleased to have everybody here, and we're looking forward to a very nice event. As you can tell, this event has been growing. We now have this additional room, and as you saw just a few minutes ago, we have too many people for this particular room, which is, I think, a good sign. It means there's a lot of interest. As many of you know, this has been going on for 9 years now, and it's been gradually building toward, I think, the level we have now. And I wanted to really thank Ida DiCiate, who is the person who did all the legwork and really put this thing together. I'd like to thank Ida right now. Ida? She was responsible, and I can tell you we've had a number of discussions. I'm sure she didn't get much sleep over the last few weeks because she's been running around. But anyway, she's put this together just like a pro, as she always has. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank a number of our sponsors, SEA Biosciences, Alexandria Real Estate, Amgen, Canada. In fact, we have some representatives from Canada that have been helping us out, and I know the connection with Katrina Jameson has been instrumental in that regard. Celgene, Connect, Dwayne Roth, the Foundation of Medicine, Gilead, Inhibrix, Janssen, Kiowa Kirin, Lilly, Regulus, Sanofi Ventures, Summers Media, Takeda, Tanabe Research, Teva, as well as the Science Network and Wilson Sonsini, the law firm. So we want to thank all of our sponsors. This meeting could not be held without their contributions and their involvement. So before we get started here, I wanted to introduce Tom Kipps, who is our Deputy Director of Research, who's going to get the morning meeting launched here. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Ida, again. It's been fabulous. It's hard to believe this is the ninth symposium. Dennis Carson, who can't be here today, actually is very interested in how the proceedings are going and wishes this to go very well. But I think that this is a tremendous activity, and I'm really pleased to see it grow. Having the opportunity to just say here, I get an opportunity right now to brag about our new director, at Scott Lipman. We're very pleased to have him. This is his first time he can attend this meeting. And let me give you a little bit of insight. Scott received his MD degree from Johns Hopkins, has trained in a number of areas. He's triple certified in hematology and oncology and internal medicine, has also studied public health. But he was at MD Anderson, where he made his mark as the head of the thoracic and head and neck oncology department. And he actually has published over 300 publications. He's made a mark in translational research and clinical investigation. We're very proud to have him here. He's already made some stellar recruitments to the Moores Cancer Center. Dr. Kurzrock and Dr. Farrow, it's been fabulous to see this, and we're all very excited about him being here. So I just wanted to introduce Scott here, who's going to kick off the meeting with an introduction. So thank you, Scott.
Well, thank you, Tom, for that very kind introduction. I've been here almost a year, so this is my first symposium. But it's clear how critical and this symposium is to really our vision and major efforts in drug development and biomarker development. So what I was going to do, and again, I want to add my thanks, by the way, to Ida and David and Kat and Tom and others who coordinated this. It's really an amazing symposium and, again, an epicenter of what we do. So I'll talk about... I'll just give you my perspective, because I think people who are here may take for granted the region that we have, and kind of give you a sense of you'll see why I was excited to come, and in the context of the academia-industry interactions. So just a couple slides about what was happening the past several years. From my perspective, as Tom mentioned, I chaired a large department of thoracic and head and neck medical oncology. We treated a lot of lung cancer, probably more than any one place in the world. And so we had several programs that cut across the spectrum of the cancer. So we had programs that some of you may have heard about. We had the battle programs that I'll talk about just in a moment. In second-line therapy, heavily pretreated patients, we moved it up into first line, and then we had studies in earlier disease that I won't comment on. And, of course, we learned a lot. You know, there was a time, it wasn't that long ago, that we thought of lung cancer as two subtypes, right, non-small cell and small cell. And sort of the least exciting, the least potential was in non-small cell. That's when I got into it. And the many regimens, many randomized trials and high-impact journals, JCO and others, one regimen versus another, really not making much of an impact. Then we started to realize that that they weren't all the same, that smokers have a different, not only a different etiology, which we knew, of course, but a very different biology. And as a lot of you know, all of the activity, major breakthroughs in personalized medicine have occurred in never smokers, and we're really trying to crack the code in smokers. So I was at Anderson for 24 years, again, working in lung cancer, and this was really the culmination of, from my perspective, our department launched this trial called BATTLE, which was published in Cancer Discovery in 2011, and this was a very novel design. This is the first trial that actually took patients in second line, so the tumors had failed multiple lines of therapy. There was no standard treatment. Patients were re-biopsied in metastatic sites, liver, lung, many sites, profiled, and then assigned in a Bayesian way to different treatments. And, you know, coming from Texas, people thought we were crazy cowboys. How can you take a patient who's, you know, failed multiple regimens and re-biopsy the risks of that, pneumothorax and so on, to do this? But, you know, we felt it was important to know what was going on in genomics at the time we were going to select treatment. Tumors evolve, and very little was known about this prior to this trial. And the thought was that doctors and patients wouldn't get it. They wouldn't want to participate. There was even ethical issues raised. This now has become the gold standard, this kind of design across the world. Nobody even questions this. I just have to say that it was interesting in these early days of doing this. Now we know we need to know what's going on at the time you treat a patient. It doesn't really help you too much to know what's going on a year and a half ago before multiple therapies and so on. The tumor has evolved. Different genetic drivers can evolve. But what happened during the BATTLE trial, and this really hit very close to what I do. We, in lung, a lot of you know about the EGFR tyrosine kinase mutation story with erlotinib and gefitinib. I know Neil Gibson knows. He was in the thick of this. We at Anderson had treated more patients than anyone in the world with EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitors and completely missed the boat here, not looking for this association. The most recent, probably the most dramatic, was the ML4-ALK fusion story in lung cancer to show you how quickly things can move now. And I go, you know, again, you all know this, but it's worth emphasizing that it takes an easy 10, 20 years from discovery to developing an intervention that's FDA approved traditionally. This is how fast things are moving now. The ML4-ALK fusion transforming gene was reported in Nature in 2007. The ASCO report, clinical report, was less than 3 years ago in June of 2009 by repositioning crizotinib, and there may be more discussion of that, and it was FDA approved within the next year. So I think what we have here in this era of personalized therapy, this region, I think, is perfectly poised to make major impact because of the exceptional basic science here and the surrounding institutes, the extraordinary biotech environment I'll comment on. We are the only NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center. It's so a very good position to translate this. But clearly, we need to develop a very robust and agile phase one program, and you'll hear more about that, targeting certain subgroups from Rizal Kurzweil. But just to give you a little more detail just on what's going on here and how this symposium fits into our vision. So our vision, our mission is to save lives by transforming cancer prevention, detection, and care. This is why we come in every day. The vision is to make personalized cancer medicine a reality by leveraging the unique academia industry environment. So here you can see how we really want to take advantage of and exploit this incredible region, all of us do in this room. And to achieve this vision, we'll create, translate, disseminate exceptional cancer science and medicine. So the science here is exceptional. Again, just like the biotech region, I think people here tend to take it for granted. There's 14 National Academy of Science members that are Cancer Center members. I don't know of any other place that has this kind of wealth in science. And with major contributions, that includes Dennis Carson, the former director who invented a drug that cures a type of leukemia, hairy cell leukemia, and most recently, Napo Ferrara, who discovered VEGF and then made the first VEGF antibodies that then were transformed to Avastin. Napo, who's here, of course, is a National Academy of Science member, Lasker Prize winner, General Motors, and so on. But to show you what an incredible region this is, that we recruited him. He started in January, and in February, he won the Breakthrough Prize. So just being here is an incredible environment to that wasn't a quote from Napo, but I'm extrapolating. So, and the other point to mention, and it was always great to be around smart people and great scientists. The difference is, as a clinical translation person, which is where I come from, being around this kind of science and being able to translate happens very quickly now, which it wasn't before, as the example I gave you with the ALK fusion. But so we have very strong scientists. But if you look at the rest of it, we have 63 members, basic science members, and two basic science programs in the Cancer Center. And in 2012, this group published 68 papers in Cell Science or Nature journals. So again, by any metric, this is spectacular. I do want to comment. I'm not going to steal Rizal's thunder, but Tom referred to two major recruits. Actually, Dennis Carson referred to them as game changers. Rizal is here. She'll talk. She's senior deputy director for clinical science. She's vice chief and will be chief of HEMOC in mid 2014. She was chair of the Department of Investigational Cancer Therapeutics at MD Anderson. Founded two training programs at MD Anderson. PI of the CTEP Phase 1 program. She's chair of the Southwest Oncology Group, the largest cooperative oncology group, NCI Cooperative Oncology Group. She chairs the Early Therapeutics Committee, so it aligns this program here very well, both locally and nationally. And people think that MD Anderson, because it has a lot of patients, these things just happen. When Rizal developed her program there, the number of early Phase 1 trials was less than 20, and you can see the number of patients. After a very short time, she had built this program to over 1,100 patients, and she's doing the same here. The heme traditionally is very strong, with really legends in the field from Helen Rainey, Sam Rappaport, Sandy Shatil, Carson, Kipps, Jameson. Incredible hematology. Solid tumor is growing quite a bit now. It's same, but we actually added a new member, a very strong member that Tom Kipps recruited, who joined in July from Harvard. And he's actually bringing a very strong program here in myelodysplastic syndrome with genomic profiling. Here are a couple of his papers. And taking this to clinic with a biotech in town, Genoptics, and this may come up more. He also helped spearhead a myelodysplastic center of excellence. So we are now, if you Google or look for myelodysplasia, if you're a patient, we are the only one in San Diego, a myelodysplastic center of excellence, which is very important for us in terms of patients knowing they can come here for good treatment. When you talk about proximity, and this will be the rest of my talk, I'm a big believer in proximity, and this symposium is an example of that. You know, we all communicate remotely, electronically, and so on, but to be able to be in the same building, network, meet for lunch, and so on is really important, I think, for a scientific exchange. So it gets you out of your network of working with the same groups. Biotech and pharma tend to interact with the people in the field in what they do. Same thing with academia. To get them to interact directly is key. And we have some very strong programs we interact with, including Ludwig and Scripps Institution of Oceanography, very exciting area in terms of drug discovery. And then Rady's Children's Hospital, we're building now, a relationship now since Don Durden was recruited there. And then two relatively new programs, the Sanford Consortium for Regenerative Medicine opened in January, four investigators from here, led by Kat Jameson, who heads the Morris Stem Cell Program, moved here. And then the Center for Applied for Advanced Laboratory Medicine, opened in April, and this is where we're going to do our CLIA genomics. It's in the same region, and we hope to do cell therapy there as well. So this really, I think, tells the whole story when I talk about this unique region that we're in. So here's Moores, and around us are Salk and Sanford Burnham, and it turns out, so there are 41 NCI-designated comprehensive cancer centers. There are seven in the country NCI-designated basic science cancer centers. So MIT, Wistar, Cold Spring Harbor, and so on. Sanford and Salk, Sanford Burnham Salk, are NCI-designated cancer centers. So in about 6 months ago, we formed a council. Tony Hunter came up with the acronym C3, and we're working together, leveraging resources, and actually have a very big fundraiser together, a bike ride, which I hope you'll think about doing in late October, to raise research for money for cancer research. But, of course, we have other very strong institutes around here that we're interacting with, the Scripps Research Institute, La Jolla Allergy, and Venter, which, of course, is moving right up on campus. And then you have all these dots here are the latest estimate of our map of biotech in this region. And the larger green boxes here are larger pharma. And so you can see this incredible density of biotech and pharma. It's either second or third in the country. Next, Boston, this is the recent ranking shown here, the second largest life science cluster. So, and about 300 of these biotechs actually are involved in cancer in some way. So you can see why we feel we're really very well positioned to work with all of you in helping to translate. And you'll hear some very good examples of that. Other major programs to enhance the academia industry relations. We, of course, have the Office of Industry Relations. This heads everything. EDA heads this. We have a NCI T32 cancer training program. This is the only one in the country like this, basically training the next generation to do to sort of cross that proverbial valley of death, to actually learn how to take discoveries into the clinic, lead compounds, non-clinical tox, all the things they don't teach you as an academic. So this is a very important program. We're forming an industry and innovation council. Karen Mason on our board has been very successful in the private sector, particularly in genomics, is helping lead this effort. And Nat Pofara will head this. This is an evolution. And I'll comment on the Center for Novel Therapeutics, led by Tom Kipps and co-led by Dennis Carson. Just another map to show you what's happening right here. So I've given you the big picture in California. This is what's happening right here. This is the campus of UCSD. This is what had been the main campus of the medical school and so on. This campus is evolving. This is called East Campus, I guess because it's east of 5. We like to call it the Cancer Campus evolving. So here's Morris Cancer Center, the Jacobs Medical Center, Hospital for Cancer Care, which, as you know, is under construction, is right here near us. The Clinical Translational Research Institute, where we'll be doing phase one work, will be here. We're doing it somewhere else now in this region. And then I didn't point this out, but here's the center right here, the Center for Advanced Laboratory Medicine, where we're doing CLIA genomics, and the Center for Novel Therapeutics, which I'll comment in a moment. We also have programs. We're also affiliated with Hillcrest, where we treat patients as well. We're very excited about this initiative, the Center for Novel Therapeutics, which is an innovator space. Tom Kipps is leading this. This, I think, will be sort of the final piece of the puzzle for really galvanizing this incredible region of academia, industry, and collaboration. This literally will be a building where it will be roughly half occupied by private sector, half by Morris Cancer Center scientists like Tom and Dennis and so on, and David Cherish, so that literally every time you go down to get by the water cooler, there'll be interactions and so on between biotech and pharma, which we are very hopeful based on some other very exciting and productive models, such as Alexandria's development in Seattle, to really expedite the development of these agents. And then the hospitals here will have three floors, which will be for inpatient cell therapy and so on. There will be a dedicated stem cell unit. This is really important for us because, you know, cancer patients are more difficult, have unique aspects, and right now patients are scattered in Thornton and so on. They'll be in three contiguous floors with the same nurses, same doctors, and so we're excited about that. So I just want to finish with our public face for personalized medicine, and which is, of course, based on the vision I told you. Everything we do is geared towards personalized therapy, personalized medicine. My answer to cancer is the public face. Lauren Hammond, one of our board members, working with other people, came up with a lot of this area, Barbara Parker, Tom Kipps. And my answer to cancer, we've actually trademarked this, copyrighted, and since this is the major face of our program, we didn't want one of our neighbors to come up with my better answer to cancer, so this is now trademarked. It's interesting to me, and I'll finish with this. It's interesting to me that you know, personalized medicine, I think everyone wants to get there, right? I think we're there. We have to figure out there's a long way to go. And so we developed this. And it was interesting to me that shortly after this started, Cancer Discovery, which is the flagship journal for the American Association for Cancer Research, did a freelance article, contacted me about this program. They'd seen it in the web. And the reporter said, well, I don't understand what the big deal is. Doesn't everyone want to do this? And I said, yeah, I think everyone wants to do it. I think not everyone, but I think everyone should want to do this. The issue is, can you do it? Do you have a critical mass like this? Do you have this biotech region? Do you have CLIA genomics? Do you have the science expertise to do it? And we do here. So this is the article. So I'm looking forward to a very exciting symposium. Again, my first one, and the program looks spectacular, and a lot of great interactions and networking to help get these biomarkers and drugs out there to help our patients. So, David, thank you.